I think I'll walk up street to the Red Apple and get an ice cream bar, Ralph said. It was almost 10 o'clock. His heart was beating much too fast, and his thoughts were hard to find under the constant white noise of terror which now filled him. He had never felt less like ice cream in his entire life, but it was a reasonable enough excuse for a trip to the Red Apple. It was the first week of August, and the weatherman had said the mercury would probably top 90 by early afternoon, with thunderstorms to follow in the early evening. Ralph thought he needn't worry about the thunderstorms. A bookcase stood on a spread of newspapers by the kitchen door. Lois had been painting it barn red. Now she got to her feet, put her hands into the small of her back, and stretched. Ralph could hear the minute crackling sounds of her spine. I'll go with you. My head'll ache tonight if I don't get away from that paint for a while. I don't know why I wanted to paint on such a muggy day in the first place. The last thing on earth Ralph wanted was to be accompanied up to the Red Apple by Lois. You don't have to, honey. I'll bring you back one of those coconut popsicles you like. I wasn't even planning on taking Rosalie. It's so humid. Go sit on the back porch, why don't you? Any popsicle you carry back from the store on a day like this will be falling off the stick by the time you get it here, she said. Come on, let's go while there's still shade on this side of the... She trailed off. The little smile she'd been wearing slipped off her face. It was replaced by a look of dismay, and the gray of her aura, which had only darkened slightly during the years Ralph hadn't been able to see it, now began to glow with flocks of reddish-pink embers. Ralph, what's wrong? What are you really going to do? Nothing, he said, but the scar was glowing inside his arm, and the tick of the death watch was everywhere, loud and everywhere. It was telling him he had an appointment to keep, a promise to keep. Yes, there is, and it's been wrong for the last 2 or 3 months, maybe longer. I'm a foolish woman. I knew something was happening, but I couldn't bring myself to look at it dead on, because I was afraid, and I was right to be afraid, wasn't I? I was right. Lois. She was suddenly crossing the room to him, crossing fast, almost leaping, the old back injury not slowing her down in the least. And before he could stop her, she had seized his right arm and was holding it out, looking at it fixedly. The scar was glowing a fierce, bright red. Ralph had a moment to hope that it was strictly an aural glow, and she wouldn't be able to see it. Then she looked up, her eyes round and full of terror. Terror and something else. Ralph thought that something else was recognition. Oh, my God, she whispered. The men in the park, the ones with the funny names, clothes and lashes, something like that, and one of them cut you. Oh, Ralph, oh, my God, what are you supposed to do? Now, Lois, don't take on. Don't you dare tell me not to take on, she shrieked into his face. Don't you dare, don't you dare. Hurry, the interior voice whispered. You don't have time to stand around and discuss this. Somewhere it's already begun to happen, and the death watch you hear may not be ticking just for you. I have to go. He turned and blundered toward the door. In his agitation, he did not notice a certain Sherlock Holmesian circumstance attending this scene. A dog which should have barked. A dog which always barked her stern disapproval when voices were raised in this house, but did not. Rosalie was missing from her usual place by the screen door, and the door itself was standing ajar. Rosalie was the first thing from Ralph's mind at that moment. He felt knee-deep in molasses and thought he would be doing well just to make the porch, let alone the Red Apple up the street. His heart thumped and skidded in his chest. His eyes were burning. No, Lois screamed. No, Ralph, please, please don't leave me. She ran after him, clutched his arm. She was still holding her paintbrush, and the fine red droplets which splattered his shirt looked like blood. Now she was crying, and her expression of utter, abject sorrow nearly broke his heart. He didn't want to leave her like this. Wasn't sure he could leave her like this. He turned and took her by her forearms. Lois, I have to go. You haven't been sleeping, she babbled. I knew that, and I knew it meant something was wrong, but it doesn't matter. We'll go away. We can leave right now, this minute. We'll just take Rosalie and our toothbrushes and go. He squeezed her arms and she stopped, looking up at him with her wet eyes. Her lips were trembling.
Lois, listen to me. I have to do this.
I lost Paul. I can't lose you too, she wailed. I couldn't stand it. Oh, Ralph, I couldn't stand it.
You'll be able to, he thought. Short-timers are a lot tougher than they look. They have to be.
Ralph felt a couple of tears trickle down his cheeks. He suspected their source was more weariness than grief. If he could make her see that all this changed nothing, only made what he had to do harder. He held her at arm's length. The scar on his arm was throbbing more fiercely than ever, and the feeling of time slipping relentlessly away had become overwhelming.
Walk with me at least part way, if you want, he said. Maybe you can even help me do what I have to do. I've had my life, Lois, and a fine one it was. But she hasn't really had anything yet, and I'll be damned if I let that son of a bitch have her just because he's got a score to settle with me.
What son of a bitch? Ralph, what in the world are you talking about?
I'm talking about Natalie Deepnow. She's supposed to die this morning. Only I'm not going to let that happen.
Nat?
Ralph, why would anyone want to hurt Nat?
She looked very bewildered, very our Lois. But wasn't there something else beneath that daffy exterior? Something careful and calculating? Ralph thought the answer was yes.
Ralph had an idea Lois wasn't half as bewildered as she was pretending to be. She had fooled McGovern for years with that act. Him, too, at least part of the time. And this was just another, and rather brilliant, variation of the same old scam.
What she was really trying to do was hold him here. She loved Nat deeply, but to Lois, a choice between her husband and the little girl who lived up the lane was no choice at all. She didn't consider either age or questions of fairness to have any bearing on the situation. Ralph was her man, and to Lois, that was all that mattered.
It won't work, he said, not unkindly. He disengaged himself and started for the door again. I made a promise, and I'm all out of time.
Break it, then, she cried,
and the mixture of terror and rage in her voice stunned him.
I don't remember much about that time, but I remember we got involved with things that almost got us killed, and for reasons we couldn't even understand. So break it, Ralph. Better your promise than my heart.
And what about the kid? What about Helen, for that matter?
That's all she lives for. Doesn't Helen deserve something better from me than a broken promise? I don't care what she deserves, what any of them deserve, she shouted. And then her face crumpled. Yes, all right, I suppose I do. But what about us, Ralph? Don't we count?
Her eyes, those dark and eloquent Spanish eyes of hers, pleaded with him. If he looked into them too long, it would become all too easy to cry it off. So Ralph looked away.
I mean to do it, honey. Nat's going to get what you and I have already had. Another 70 years or so of days and nights.
She looked at him helplessly, but made no attempt to stop him again. Instead, she began to cry.
Foolish old man, she whispered. Foolish, willful old man.
Yes, I suppose, he said, and lifted her chin. But I'm a foolish, willful old man of my word.
Come with me. I'd like that.
All right, Ralph.
She could hardly hear her own voice, and her skin was as cold as clay. Her aura had gone almost completely red.
What is it? What's going to happen to her?
She's going to be hit by a green Ford sedan. Unless I take her place, she's going to be splashed all over Harris Avenue. And Helen's going to see it happen.
As they walked up the hill toward the Red Apple, at first Lois kept falling behind, then trotting to catch up. But she quit when she saw she could not slow him with such a simple trick. Ralph told her what little more he could. She had some memory of being under the lightning-struck tree out by the extension, a memory she had believed, at least until this morning, to be the memory of a dream. But of course she hadn't been there during Ralph's final confrontation with Atropos. Ralph told her of it now,
of the random death Atropos intended Natalie to suffer if Ralph continued standing in the way of his plans. He told her of how he'd extracted a promise from Clotho and Lachesis that Atropos might in this case be overruled and Nat saved. "I have an idea that the decision was made very near the top of this crazy building. This tower they kept talking about. Maybe at the very top." He was panting out the words, and his heart was beating more rapidly than ever. But he thought most of that could be attributed to the fast walk in the torrid day. His fear had subsided somewhat. Talking to Lois had done that much. Now he could see the red apple. Mrs. Perrine was at the bus stop, half a block farther up, standing straight as a general, reviewing troops. Her net shopping bag hung over her arm. There was a bus shelter nearby, and it was shady inside, but Mrs. Perrine stolidly ignored its existence. Even in the dazzling sunlight, he could see that her aura was the same West Point gray as it had been on that October evening in 1993. Of Helen and Nat, there was as yet no sign.
"Of course I knew who he was," Esther Perrine later tells the reporter from the Derry News. "Do I look incompetent to you, young man? Or senile? I've known Ralph Roberts for over 20 years. A good man. Not cut from the same cloth as his first wife, of course. Carolyn was a Satterwaite from the Bangor Satterwaites, but a very fine man just the same. I recognized the driver of that green Ford auto, too, right away. Pete Sullivan delivered my paper for 6 years, and he did a good job. The new one, the Morrison boy, always throws it in my flower beds or up on the porch roof. Pete was driving with his mother on his learner's permit, I understand. I hope he won't take on too much about what happened, for he's a good lad, and it really wasn't his fault. I saw the whole thing, and I'll take my oath on it. I suppose you think I'm rambling. Don't bother denying it. I can read your face just like it was your own newspaper. Never mind, though. I've said most of what I have to say. I knew it was Ralph right away, but there's something you'll get wrong, even if you put it in your story, which you probably won't. He came from nowhere to save that little girl." Esther Perrine fixes the respectfully silent young reporter with a formidable glance, fixes him as a lepidopterist might fix a butterfly on a pin after administering the chloroform. "I don't mean it was like he came from nowhere, young man, although I bet that's what you'll print." She leans toward the reporter, her eyes never leaving his face, and says it again. "He came from nowhere to save that little girl. Do you follow me? From nowhere." The accident made the front page of the following day's Derry News. Esther Perrine was sufficiently colorful in her remarks to warrant a sidebar of her own, and staff photographer Tom Matthews got a picture to go with it that made her look like Ma Jode in The Grapes of Wrath. The headline of the sidebar read, "It was like he came from nowhere. Eyewitness to tragedy says." When she read it, Mrs. Perrine was not at all surprised. "In the end, I got what I wanted," Ralph said, "but only because Clotho and Lachesis, and whoever it is they work for on the upper levels, were desperate to stop Ed." "Upper levels? What upper levels? What building?"
"Never mind. You've forgotten, but remembering wouldn't change anything. The point is just this, Lois. They didn't want to stop Ed because thousands of people would have died if he'd hit the Civic Center dead on. They wanted to stop him because there was one person whose life needed to be preserved at any cost, in their reckoning anyway. When I was finally able to make them see that I felt the same about my kid as they did about theirs, arrangements were made."
"That's when they cut you, wasn't it? And when you made the promise, the one you used to talk about in your sleep."
He shot her a wide-eyed, startled, and heartbreakingly boyish glance. She only looked back. "Yes," he said, and wiped his forehead. "I guess so." The air lay in his lungs like metal shavings. "A life for a life. That was the deal.
Natalie's in exchange for mine, and...
Hey, quit trying to wiggle away. Quit it, Rover, or I'll kick your asshole square.
Ralph broke off at the sound of that shrill, hectoring, horridly familiar voice. A voice no human being on Harris Avenue but him could hear, and looked across the street. Ralph, what?
Shh.
He pulled her back against the summer dry hedge in front of the Applebaum's house. He wasn't doing anything so polite as perspiring now. His whole body was crawling with a stinking sweat, as heavy as engine oil, and he could feel every gland in his body dumping a hot load into his blood. His underwear was trying to crawl up into the crack of his ass and disappear. His tongue tasted like a blown fuse. Lois followed the direction of his gaze.
"Rosalie!" she cried. "Rosalie, you bad dog! What are you doing over there?"
The black-and-tan beagle she had given Ralph on their first Christmas was across the street, standing, except cringing was actually the word for what she was doing, on the sidewalk, in front of the house where Helen and Nat had lived until Ed had popped his wig. For the first time in the years they'd had her, the beagle reminded Lois of Rosalie Number One. Rosalie Number Two appeared to be all alone over there, but that did not allay Lois's sudden terror.
"Oh, what have I done?" she thought. "What have I done?"
"Rosalie!" she screamed. "Rosalie, get over here!" The dog heard. Lois could see that she did, but she didn't move.
"Ralph, what's happening over there?"
"Shh," he said again, and then just a little farther up the street, Lois saw something which stopped her breath. Her last unstated hope that all this was happening only in Ralph's head, that it was a kind of flashback to their previous experience, disappeared because now their dog had company. Holding a skip rope looped over her right arm, 6-year-old Nat Deepnoe came to the end of her walk and looked down the street toward a house she didn't remember ever living in, toward a lawn where her shirtless father, an undesignated player named Ed Deepnoe, had once sat among intersecting rainbows, listening to the Jefferson airplane as a single spot of blood dried on his John Lennon spectacles. Natalie looked down the street and smiled happily at Rosalie, who was panting and watching her with miserable, frightened eyes. "Atropos doesn't see me," Ralph thought. "He's concentrating on Rosie, and on Natalie, of course, and he doesn't see me." Everything had come around with a sort of hideous perfection. The house was there, Rosalie was there, and Atropos was there too, wearing a hat cocked back on his head and looking like a wiseacre news reporter in a 1950s B picture, something directed by Ida Lupino, perhaps. Only this time, it wasn't a Panama with a bite gone from the brim. This time, it was a Boston Red Sox cap, and it was too small even for Atropos, because the adjustable band in the back had been pulled all the way over to the last hole. It had to be, in order to fit the head of the little girl who owned it. "All we need now is Pete the Paperboy, and the show would be perfect," Ralph thought. The final scene of Insomnia, or Short Time Life on Harris Avenue, a tragicomedy in three acts. Everyone takes a bow and then exits stage right. This dog was afraid of Atropos, just as Rosalie Number One had been, and the main reason the little bald doc hadn't seen Ralph and Lois was that he was trying to keep her from running off before he was ready. And here came Nat, headed down the sidewalk toward her favorite dog in the whole world, Ralph and Lois's Rosie. Her jump rope, 369, hun, the goose drank wine, was slung over her arm. She looked impossibly beautiful and impossibly fragile in her sailor shirt and blue shorts. Her pigtails bounced. "It's happening too fast," Ralph thought. "Everything is happening much too fast."
"Not at all, Ralph. You did splendidly 5 years ago. You'll do splendidly now."
It sounded like Clotho, but there was no time to look. A green car was coming slowly down Harris Avenue from the direction of the airport, moving with a sort of agonized care which usually meant a driver who was very old or very young. Agonized care or not, it was unquestionably the car. A dirty membrane hung over it like a shroud. Life is a wheel, Ralph thought,
and it occurred to him that this was not the first time the idea had occurred to him. Sooner or later, everything you thought you'd left behind comes around again. For good or ill, it comes around again. Rosie made another abortive lunge for freedom, and as Atropos yanked her back, losing his hat, Nat knelt before her and patted her.
Are you lost, girl? Did you get out by yourself? That's okay, I'll take you home.
She gave Rosie a hug, her small arms passing through Atropos's arms, her small, beautiful face only inches from his ugly, grinning one. Then she got up.
Come on, Rosie. Come on, sugar pie.
Rosalie started down the sidewalk at Nat's heel, looking back once at the grinning little man and whining uneasily. On the other side of Harris Avenue, Helen came out of the Red Apple, and the last condition of the vision Atropos had shown Ralph was fulfilled. Helen had a loaf of bread in one hand. Her Red Sox hat was on her head. Ralph swept Lois into his arms and kissed her fiercely.
I love you with all my heart, he said. Remember that, Lois.
I know you do, she said calmly. And I love you. That's why I can't let you do it.
She seized him around the neck, her arms like bands of iron, and he felt her breasts push against him hard as she drew in all the breath her lungs could hold.
Go away, you rotten bastard, she screamed. I can't see you, but I know you're there. Go away! Go away and leave us alone!
Natalie stopped dead in her tracks and looked at Lois with wide-eyed surprise. Rosalie stopped beside her, ears pricking.
Don't go into the street, Nat! Lois screamed at her. Don't!
Then her hands, which had been laced together at the back of Ralph's neck, were holding nothing. Her arms, which had been locked about his shoulders in a death grip, were empty. He was gone like smoke. Atropos looked toward the cry of alarm and saw Ralph and Lois standing on the other side of Harris Avenue. More important, he saw Ralph seeing him. His eyes widened, his lips parted in a hateful snarl. One hand flew to his bald pate. It was crisscrossed with old scars, the remnants of wounds made with his own scalpel, in an instinctive gesture of defense that was 5 years too late.
Fuck you, Shorts! This little bitch is mine!
Ralph saw Nat looking at Lois with uncertainty and surprise. He heard Lois shrieking at her, telling her not to go into the street. Then it was Lachesis he heard, speaking from some place close by.
Come up, Ralph. As far as you can. Quickly.
He felt the clench in the center of his head, felt that brief swoop of vertigo in his stomach, and suddenly the whole world brightened and filled with color. He half saw and half felt Lois's arms and locked hands collapse inward through the place where his body had been a moment before. And then he was drawing away from her. No, being carried away from her. He felt the pull of some great current and understood, in a vague way, that if there was such a thing as a higher purpose, he had joined it and would soon be swept downriver with it. Natalie and Rosalie were now standing directly in front of the house which Ralph had once shared with Bill McGovern before selling up and moving into Lois's house. Nat glanced doubtfully at Lois, then waved tentatively.
She's okay, Lois. See, she's right here.
She patted Rosalie's head.
I'll cross her safe, don't worry.
Then as she started into the street, she called to her mother.
I can't find my baseball cap. I think somebody stole it.
Rosalie was still on the sidewalk. Nat turned to her impatiently.
Come on, girl.
The green car was moving in the child's direction, but very slowly. It did not at first look like much of a danger to her. Ralph recognized the driver at once, and he did not doubt his senses or suspect he was having a hallucination. In that instant, it seemed very right that the approaching sedan should be piloted by his old paperboy.
Natalie!
Lois screamed.
Natalie! No!
Atropos darted forward and slapped Rosalie number two on the rump.
Get out of here, mutt! Go on, before I change my mind!
Atropos spared Ralph one final grimacing leer as Rosalie yelped and darted into the street, and into the path of the Ford driven by 16-year-old Pete Sullivan. Natalie didn't see the car. She was looking at Lois, whose face was all red and scary. It had finally occurred to Nat that Lois wasn't screaming about Rosie at all, but something else entirely. Pete registered the sprinting beagle. It was the little girl he didn't see. He swerved to avoid Rosalie, a maneuver that ended with a Ford aimed directly at Natalie. Ralph could see two frightened faces behind the windshield as the car veered, and he thought Mrs. Sullivan was screaming. Atropos was leaping up and down, doing an obscenely joyful hornpipe.
Yeah! Short time! Silly white hair! Told you I'd fix you!
In slow motion, Helen dropped the loaf of bread she was holding.
Natalie, look out!
She shrieked. Ralph ran. Again, there was that clear sensation of moving by thought alone, and as he closed in on Nat, now diving forward with his hands stretched out, aware of the car looming just beyond her, kicking bright arrows of sun through its dark death bag and into his eyes, he clenched his mind again, bringing himself back down to the short-time world for the last time. He fell into a landscape that rang with splintered screams. Helen's mingled with Lois's, mingled with the ones being made by the tires of the Ford. Weaving its way through them like an outlaw vine was the sound of Atropos's jeers. Ralph got a brief glimpse of Nat's wide blue eyes, and then he shoved her in the chest and stomach as hard as he could, sending her flying backward with her hands and feet thrust out in front of her. She landed sitting up in the gutter, bruising her tailbone on the curb, but breaking nothing. From some distant place, Ralph heard Atropos squawk in fury and disbelief. Then 2 tons of Ford, still traveling at 20 miles an hour, struck Ralph, and the soundtrack dropped dead. He was heaved upward and backward in a low, slow arc. It felt slow, anyway from inside, and went with the Ford's hood ornament imprinted on his cheek like a tattoo, and one broken leg trailing behind him. There was time to see his shadow sliding along the pavement beneath him in a shape like an X. There was time to see a spray of red droplets in the air just above him, and to think that Lois must have splattered more paint on him than he had thought at first. And there was time to see Natalie sitting at the side of the street, weeping but all right, and to sense Atropos on the sidewalk behind her, shaking his fists and dancing with rage. I believe I did pretty damn good for an old geezer, Ralph thought, but now I think I could really do with a nap. Then he came back to earth with a terrible mortal smack and rolled, skull fracturing, back breaking, lungs punctured by brittle thorns of bone as his rib cage exploded, liver turning to pulp, intestines first coming unanchored and then rupturing. And nothing hurt. Nothing at all. Lois never forgot the awful thud that was the sound of Ralph's return to Harris Avenue, or the bloody splash marks he left behind as he cartwheeled to a stop. She wanted to scream, but dared not. Some deep, true voice told her that if she did that, the combination of shock, horror, and summer heat would send her unconscious to the sidewalk, and when she came to again, Ralph would be beyond her. She ran instead of screaming, losing one shoe, marginally aware that Pete Sullivan was getting out of the Ford, which had come to rest almost exactly where Joe Wise's car, also a Ford, had come to rest after Joe had hit Rosalie number one all those years ago. She was also marginally aware that Pete was screaming. She reached Ralph and fell on her knees beside him, seeing that his shape had somehow been changed by the green Ford, that the body beneath the familiar chino pants and paint-splattered shirt was fundamentally different from the body which had been pressed against hers less than a minute ago. But his eyes were open, and they were bright and aware. Ralph? Yes. His voice was clear and strong, unmarked by either confusion or pain. Yes, Lois, I hear you. She started to put her arms around him and hesitated, thinking about how you weren't supposed to move people who had been badly injured, because you might hurt them even worse or kill them. Then she looked at him again, at the blood pouring from the sides of his mouth and the way his lower body seemed to have come unhinged from the upper part, and decided it would be impossible to hurt Ralph more than he had been hurt already. She hugged him, leaning close, leaning into the smells of disaster, blood and the sweet, sour acetone odor of spent adrenaline on the outrush of his breath.
"You did it this time, didn't you?" Lois asked.
She kissed his cheek, his blood-soaked eyebrows, his bloody forehead, where the skin had been peeled away from his skull in a flap. She began to cry.
"Look at you. Shirt torn, pants torn. Do you think clothes grow on trees?"
"Is he all right?" Helen asked from behind her. Lois didn't turn around, but she saw the shadows on the street. Helen with her arm around her weeping daughter's shoulders, and Rosie standing by Helen's right leg.
"He saved Nat's life, and I didn't even see where he came from. Please, Lois, say he's all right."
Then the shadow shifted, as Helen moved to a place where she could actually see Ralph, and she pulled Nat's face against her blouse and began to wail. Lois leaned closer to Ralph, caressing his cheeks with the palms of her hands, wanting to tell him that she had meant to come with him. She had meant to, yes, but in the end he had been too quick for her. In the end he had left her behind. "Love you, sweetheart," Ralph said. He reached up and copied her gesture with his own palm. He tried to raise his left hand as well, but it would only lie on the pavement and twitch. Lois took his hand and kissed it.
"Love you too, Ralph. Always. So much."
"I had to do it, you see?" "Yes." She didn't know if she did see, didn't know if she would ever see, but she knew he was dying.
"Yes, I see."
He sighed harshly. That sweet acetone smell wafted up to her again and smiled.
"Miss Chess, Miss Roberts, I mean."
It was Pete speaking in hitching gasps.
Is Mr. Roberts okay? Please say I didn't hurt him."
"Stay away, Pete," she said without turning around. "Ralph is fine. He just tore his pants and shirt a little. Didn't you, Ralph?" "Yes," he said. "You bet. You'll just have to horsewhip me for..." He broke off and looked to her left. No one was there, but Ralph smiled anyway. "Lachesis," he said. He put out his trembling, blood-grimy right hand, and as Lois, Helen, and Pete Sullivan watched, it rose and fell twice in the empty air. Ralph's eyes moved again, this time to the right. Slowly, very slowly, he moved his hand in that direction. When he spoke this time, his voice had begun to fade.
"Hi, Clotho. Now remember, this doesn't hurt, right?"
Ralph appeared to listen and then smiled.
"Yep," he whispered. "Any way you can get her."
His hand rose and fell again in the air, then dropped back to his chest. He looked up at Lois with his fading blue eyes.
"Listen,"
he said, speaking with great effort. Yet his eyes blazed, would not let hers go.
"Every day I woke up next to you was like waking up young and seeing everything new."
He tried to raise his hand to her cheek again, and could not.
"Every day, Lois. It was like that for me too, Ralph. Like waking up young. Lois?" "What?" "The ticking," he said.
He swallowed and then said it again, enunciating the words with great effort.
"The ticking."
"What ticking?"
"Never mind.
It stopped," he said, and smiled brilliantly. Then Ralph stopped too. Clotho and Lachesis stood watching Lois weep over the man who lay dead in the street. In one hand, Clotho held his scissors. He raised the other to eye level and looked at it wonderingly. It glowed and blazed with Ralph's aura. Clotho.
"He's here. In here. How wonderful!"
Lachesis raised his own right hand. Like Clotho's left, it looked as if someone had pulled a blue mitten over the normal green-gold aura which swaddled it. Lachesis.
"Yes, he was a wonderful man."
Clotho.
"Shall we give him to her?"
Lachesis.
"Can we?"
Clotho.
"There's one way to find out."
They approached Lois, each placed the hand Ralph had shaken on one side of Lois's face.
Mummy?
Natalie Deepnot cried. In her agitation, she had reverted to the patois of her babyhood.
Who those little men? Why they touching Rose?
Shh, honey, Helen said, and buried Nat's head against her breast again. There were no men, little or otherwise, near Lois Roberts. She was kneeling alone in the street next to the man who had saved her daughter's life. Lois looked up suddenly, her eyes wide and surprised, a grief forgotten as a gorgeous feeling of light, blue light. Calmness and peace filled her. For a moment, Harris Avenue was gone. She was in a dark place filled with the sweet smells of hay and cows, a dark place that was split by 100 brilliant seams of light. She never forgot the fierce joy that leaped up in her at that moment, nor the sure sense that she was seeing a representation of a universe that Ralph wanted her to see, a universe where there was dazzling light behind the darkness. Couldn't she see it through the cracks?
Can you ever forgive me?
Pete was sobbing.
Oh, my God! Can you ever forgive me?
Oh, yes. I think so, Lois said calmly. She passed her hand down Ralph's face, closing his eyes, and then held his head in her lap and waited for the police to come. To Lois, Ralph looked as if he had gone to sleep. And, she saw, the long white scar on his right forearm was gone.
This has been a presentation of Penguin High Bridge Audio.